Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Sarah and I have talked many times about our desire to age as gracefully as possible, and skincare is a huge piece of that. I spend a lot of time and money thinking about my skin, and I have added Ritual to my routine, which just gives me a lot of comfort. Ritual is here for us. They have created a wrinkle support skin supplement and conducted clinical studies, so we know it's working. They're taking the guesswork out of skincare. Ritual Hyacera is one of several Ritual products that I love. I take the daily multivitamin, I take a probiotic, and Hyacera is that once-daily skincare supplement that is clinically proven to reduce wrinkles and fine lines and increase skin smoothness in 90 days. I recently met a friend for the first time in person as opposed to online, and we were discussing the fact that I am 43, and she said, "I cannot believe how young you look," and I thought, thank you, Ritual, for that. Start Hyacera to help minimize wrinkles without compromising on clean science. Hyacera from Ritual is a clinically proven skin supplement you can actually trust. Get 25% off your first month for a limited time at ritual.com/pantsuit. Start Ritual or add Hyacera to your subscription today. That's ritual.com/pantsuit for 25% off.
Dictionary.com has made complicit the 2017 Word of the Year.
We consider our collective responsibility and Lindy West's powerful statement that the opposite of complicity isn't apology, it's fixing what you broke.
This is Sarah from the left.
And Beth from the right.
You're listening to Pantsuit Politics.
No shouting, no insults, plenty of nuance.
Welcome to another episode, everyone. Before we get started, we have a small ask. We would love ratings and reviews for both Pantsuit Politics and especially The Nuanced Life. This is our new podcast where we talk about life beyond politics. It's like an extended final section of this show. And we really need your ratings and reviews in the podcast app on your iPhone so that other listeners can discover The Nuanced Life. So if you have a few seconds, please hop on over there and leave us a rating and review.
We also really appreciate your support on Patreon.com. That enables us to do the show and to continue building the Pantsuit Politics community. It's going to be an important part of us being able to travel some in 2018 and bring the conversations that we have on the podcast to college campuses and organizations and other schools. So we really appreciate your support there. Patreon.com. We are excited about our bonus episode for this month. If you subscribe at the $15 a month level or more, you get an extra episode of Pantsuit Politics. We usually do it by video, which we will do this month, and we're doing the 12 Days of Christmas Pantsuit Politics style. It will not be exclusively holiday focused. We're going to talk about some down ballot races. We're going to talk about gift giving. It's going to be a wide ranging discussion because that's our favorite kind.
So today we want to talk about Donald Trump. It's a special day. Wait, no, it's not a special day. It's like every other day. So we wanted to kick off the show talking about some of the reporting errors, our president's reactions to them, and also I don't even know the right word for the article, the hour-by-hour fight for Donald Trump's self-preservation, a big New York Times piece on his sort of day-to-day routine. based on about 60 insider interviews. So which would you like to tackle first, Beth?
Well, let's go with the reporting errors first. I've been thinking a lot about all the things I don't want to carry into 2018 with me.
Shoo. Oh, fake news, please.
Fake news, exactly, is one of the things that I would love to not carry into 2018.
There is not much I wouldn't give up to never hear the words fake news again. Like, I love my minivan. I would, like, tote my kids around in a Civic. I would maybe give up any number of television shows and books, treats. I'm just trying to think of things I really love that I would sacrifice to never hear those words together again.
Look, the genius of Donald Trump is taking information that is devastating to him and turning it into a sword. And that's what he's done with fake news. But let's run through, because it is important to understand the facts of what's happened over the past week. Three different media outlets have had what I would characterize as relatively minor reporting errors that were quickly corrected. They're not insignificant. They are definitely significant to the facts, but they were quickly corrected and apologies have been issued. Dave Weigel, a Washington Post reporter, tweeted a photo of Trump's Florida campaign rally, it looked like a small crowd there, and he took the picture down when the crowd size increased, and the president has tweeted about it and demanded an apology and called it fake news because, you know, he has the biggest and best crowds of all time.
So basically, he took a picture when the event was getting started when everybody wasn't there yet, and then when more people showed up, he took the picture down.
Correct.
Wow.
Now, it was a misleading photograph, but also he took it down when he realized it was
so
a misleading
photograph.
I'm
so glad we're all spending time on this.
CNN, in a story that it billed as an exclusive, reported that President Trump and other campaign officials received an email offer of a website and decryption key for hacked DNC documents. The timing of the message is important. CNN reported that the email was sent on September 4th, 2016, which would have been before a WikiLeaks dump. It was actually sent on September 14th, meaning the email was referencing documents that had already been released to the public. CNN corrected its reporting, moved on. Honestly, that one to me sounded like somebody had a typo.
The 4th versus
the 14th. But I don't know. I mean, it is important. Like, these things are supposed to be correct. That is a material difference. It's still not great to be receiving the offer of a website and decryption key for hacked documents. But anyway. And then finally, Brian Ross of ABC had another timing issue. He reported that during the campaign, the president had directed Michael Flynn to make contact with Russian officials. And it was actually, the contact had actually been directed to be after the campaign when the president was president-elect. And so that's a key error as well. And Brian Ross has actually been suspended from ABC. So lots of mistakes here. The president has said they are out of control, referring to the media. Correct reporting means nothing to them. Major lies written, then forced to be withdrawn after they are exposed. A stain on America. And he added that the reports are purposefully false and defamatory.
Which is not true.
I don't think it's true.
I mean,
I guess what I want to say about this is that we are in an unprecedented time, even not related to Donald Trump, but he certainly adds to this. The amount of important information to cover and the speed at which news outlets compete to cover that information continues to accelerate. And so there are going to be more mistakes until everyone slows down a little bit. And I think a good thing that can come out of this is more conversation about the need to slow down a little bit.
Here's what I'm wondering. Did the president tweet out when the Washington Post correctly identified a James O'Keefe spy from Project Veritas that tried to set a trap for them, which they, through good journalism and good ethics, avoided? Did he talk about that at all? Anybody?
It is ironic to hear this president talking about the importance of factual accuracy.
Oh, my God. And I mean, like, there you go. There's a perfect example of this media outlet you hate doing exactly what they were supposed to do. But I don't remember you talking about that at all, because Roy Moore is a hot freaking story. And they could have printed that and they could have fallen for it. And they could have been like, heck yeah, now we have somebody calling for an abortion. He wanted them to get an abortion. But they didn't. They did their jobs and good for them. And they deserve praise for that.
It's just frustrating because anything, we're just in this mode, right? Of just anything that bolsters our side of the fight, we seize on. And anything that doesn't, we attack. And
well, here's the
exhausting
thing, though. This is the only thing I want to say, is I feel like this is not a we story. This is a Donald Trump story. I had a lovely weekend. You know what nobody mentioned? This. You That's know what I mean? Right. Like, nobody cares. I mean, I'm not saying nobody cares, but I don't think this is on the, even the most partisan person I know on either sides. Like, they're not just up in arms about tiny factual errors. And I'm not saying that this doesn't, the way he talks about it doesn't have a long-term effect on people's attitudes about the press. But I did see recently that the actual, the reputation of the press has actually increased since the election. So, hey, there's that.
There's a lot for them to do. And I think this does connect to the story from the New York Times that you wanted to talk about, Sarah, because he uses this in that hour by hour battle for legitimacy and self-preservation.
Oh my gosh, y'all, this article. Okay, here's the first thing. The two juicy tidbits that immediately got play all over Twitter was that he drinks 12 Diet Cokes a day and can watch up to 8 hours of cable news a day. Okay, so here's the first thing. I just want to make a plea for the man's mental health, because if I drank 12 Diet Cokes a day and watched 8 hours of cable news, I would be a completely different person. I would be a different person. I'm not even kidding. Can you fathom the psychological effect those two things would have on you?
No, and I drink Diet Coke, but not 12? In the neighborhood of 12 a day.
Exactly.
No.
I mean, that's an insane amount of sugar and caffeine and what they do to your body. And
well, it's not sugar. I mean, it's
oh, that's
it's
a good
not,
point.
It's not sugar. It's not
even
real
sugar.
Stuff.
Right. And like, also just, oh man, I can watch. I leave in a foul mood when I'm at the gym and I have to watch 4 screens of cable news for 20 minutes on mute. I cannot fathom what kind of outlook I would have on the world if that's all I was watching. And, I mean, so that's the first thing. I just was kind of like, man, I almost feel sorry for you if that's what your days are, just a steady stream of Diet Cokes and cable news. That's my own personal hell.
You know what it made me think about? And I'll tell you, my first reaction to this story was, haven't I read this before? Like, a lot. Because I do think that the New York Times has particularly become obsessed with sort of his personal habits in a way that I don't find super useful. But putting that aside, when you try to carve out some space for feeling sorry for him or having some empathy, what it reminds me of is the I check our statistics a lot for Pantsuit Politics. I check our downloads. I check our ratings and reviews because I'm a business person, right? And I look for data all the time. And so I always have this feeling, especially before I check our reviews, of like, okay, Beth, if somebody said something awful, it's okay. If somebody doesn't like this, it's all right. If the show isn't downloaded a lot, it's okay. You're okay. Everything's fine. But it gives me this like horrible, sick feeling for like half a second before I give myself that pep talk, because you want good feedback, right? And if I were the president of the United States, living for the feedback of cable news.
Oh my God.
I can't even imagine how awful that would be. Awful. I think you would just have to make a decision that you're not going to look and go on about.
Yeah, that's what they all do. They all
say that. I don't know how you have time to look anyway, but you have to just go on about your business and do the best that you can.
I mean, but here's the thing. He has no other business. He only did this so that he could be the king. You know what I mean? Like, he doesn't have anything else to focus on because all he cares about is himself. And so how people feel about him is literally his only business. That's literally his business. And it always has been. And I thought, what did he do when he was a real estate guy? And I bet you he took the Sharpies to the newspaper when he, in the New York City papers, and saw what his write-ups were and talked about what people were thinking. I mean, he probably did this the exact, I would imagine that it wasn't that much different. I mean, the part where Jared Kushner's like, he's 71, he's set in his ways, he's not going to change. I just thought, talk about modeling, like, self-reflection and self-awareness for the country. We just talked about this with relationships of parent and children. And, like, I mean, it confirmed all my sort of worst instincts about him, as these pieces often do. And it just honestly made me feel a little bit sorry for him, because that has to be, they all say they don't watch news. Obama said he never watched it. W said he never watched it. Because, like, if you have the most base instinct for self-preservation, why would you? Like, he doesn't, but, like, this, it's not really an accurate title, because that's not self-preservation. That is just self-destroying. I don't understand.
And you know, there's a loop, because pieces like this reinforce that for him and reinforce for his supporters that he's being treated unfairly. I've been thinking about this a lot with the election of Roy Moore and Doug Jones coming up in Alabama tomorrow. Well, it's the day that we release this podcast. I wonder to what extent the piling on contributes to that sense of, I'll vote for whoever I damn well please. Because it has been a piling on, right? It's a scandalous story, as you said. It's a hot story. People will cover it and they will get clicks and eyeballs and attention. And because of that, it has been covered like no other. And I just wonder to what extent President Trump being covered for drinking Diet Coke and ordering McDonald's and sitting with the remote makes people who would otherwise be more open-minded double down, makes Alabama voters say, screw you all, I will do what I want to do. See, you're biased. You don't want him to win. You don't want this to happen. Now, the other side of me says, what are they supposed to do? What are they supposed to do? Not cover this? Are they not supposed to let us know how our president is spending his time? I want to know that he's been on a Trump property 104 days of his first term. I want to know that information. I think that I am entitled to it as a member of the voting public. So I get what a difficult time this is. Shoot, we have trouble making editorial decisions about this podcast, and we have such a slim number of considerations compared to outlets like the New York Times. It is very challenging right now.
Here's the thing. To the people who are going to look at this and say, like in a, if you're going to, like, revenge vote, I mean, I'm sorry. I acknowledge that you are here, but I'm not going to be able to convince you. Like, if you're to the point where you're just being like, burn it to the ground because I hate liberals and screw everybody, like, forget it. I'm not even going to bother with you. That sounds bad. It's not that I don't want you to live here. Stay in the country. We'll try to get along the best we can. But, like, if you're at it, there's nothing I can do if your attitude is like that. I really feel like that. And, I mean, I think you're right. I think we have a right to know what he's being like. I think that the New York Times, although I have a lot of issues with how they cover things, I'm not always happy with the New York Times either. I don't think that that can be there. I don't think that can, at least they're going to tell themselves that's not part of their equation. You know, like they can't think, well, is this going to piss off his base? They just, you know, they can't think like that. I mean, I know that's the guiding light of Breitbart, but thank God New York Times isn't Breitbart.
So I was having a text exchange with our listener, Bren, this morning about some of the New York Times editorial decisions. And I had this very fascinating conversation over Facebook Messenger this weekend with a communications professor at a college that we'll be visiting next year. And we were talking about how difficult it is for students today to distinguish between commentary and actual journalism. And we were talking about new media and old media and how difficult it becomes to distinguish between them sometimes because they mirror each other, right? Old media starts to adopt some of the tactics of new media. And so it all starts to blend together. It all starts to look the same. We have all this information at our fingertips, but we're not great at asking, from where did this information come? How is this information sourced? Who all has contributed to fact-checking it? And thinking about all of that and talking with Bren this morning, here's my idea. What if we went full transparency with everything for a while to see how it goes? What if the New York Times said, let's pretend I'm a New York Times reporter, because I don't want to make any guesses about the political leanings of the people at the New York Times. So I'm a reporter. What if it said, this is commentary by Beth Silvers, a registered Republican? Or, this piece was reported by Beth Silvers, a registered Republican. It was fact-checked by the following four people and listed their party affiliations. And, you know, had different parties in that list of fact-checkers or whatever. Because I think media outlets really, really try to get this stuff right. I do not think this is a bunch of partisans trying to force an agenda down people's throat. I think that happens at Fox News pretty blatantly. And I wouldn't have said that even a couple years ago, but it's just become too blatant to even be a little bit equivocating about.
Mm-hmm.
But I just wonder what it would be like to try a new way of explicitly labeling work for what it is. And the author for who the author is.
So here's the thing. I think a lot of reporters aren't registered, and they'll tell you that they, I mean, Katie Turry talked in her book that she doesn't vote. So I think that won't work all the time because they're going to say they don't have political leanings, and they're going to insist they don't have political leanings.
If That's the problem, right?
Yeah. But in the, and maybe, look, I think that there are reporters who, okay, so here's the thing. Their political leanings aside, if you are a person who believes that there is a liberal media bias, which arguably, look, there is. And this is the reason why. It's not because of George Soros or some massive conspiracy. It is because to survive and to thrive, for the most part, in these industries, in particularly at the New York Times, the Washington Post, you have to have basically come from a massive amount of money. Not a massive amount of money, but you have to have financial support because they do not pay well and they are very expensive cities. And to sort of build up your career, it takes getting into the right university. It takes being able to live in the right place. It takes being able to have some other financial support because who the heck can live in New York City on like a New York Times researcher's salary? You know what I mean? So there was a really good Twitter thread after Matt Lauer was fired, and the guy was like, let's not do this. Let's not do these stars. Like, take that $26 million and pay more and better reporters. Like, the PBS NewsHour has won a Peabody, and they don't spend anywhere near the salaries you guys do on these quote-unquote stars. So, like, I just think that let's pay journalists better. Let's demand of the – if you want to demand something of the liberal media, then demand that they – make it easier to have more diversity from perspectives in hiring. So, like, even if you get somebody there that is a Democrat, maybe they're a Democrat from Texas or the middle of Iowa, you know what I mean? Or Kentucky, mm-hmm. even better, so that they have a diverse perspective, even if their politics have become more liberal over time. Because I think that's what's missing from the media. And I think that's how you got the election of Donald Trump, is because for the most part, it is a very closed universe of schools and geographic locations and economics that produces the people who work in that industry.
I wondered about that when I was watching the Frank Luntz focus group that's been everywhere this week with a group of Alabama voters. What would it have sounded like to have, and I specifically thought of you, Sarah, if you had been asking those questions, a youngish woman from Kentucky mm-hmm. who has an accent that is more recognizable to Alabama voters, what would it be like to have a conversation with different voices in it? I've been very frustrated with The Daily, the New York Times podcast, which I love and we reference all the time.
I know, me too.
But these choices to highlight, and The New Washington, these choices to highlight Sean Hannity, to highlight James O'Keefe, to highlight all of these admitted provocateurs' voices. Mm-hmm. If you want to highlight different media, there's a whole world out there of yep. people trying to do a really good job that don't have anywhere near the platform of a Sean Hannity. Go do that. Highlight those people.
I mean, here's the thing about Frank Luntz. Like, yes, I get it. You're a pollster. You're a focus. You do focus groups. But really what you do is market and sell the results of those focus groups. Was it on 60 Minutes?
This was on Vice.
On Vice. Do we think Vice would have been interested in a focus group where people are like, I'm really torn up about it. I don't usually vote Democrat. I think this is offensive. No, they wouldn't. If it was like this nuanced sort of everybody being like, I don't know what the heck to do, they wouldn't have put it on Vice. So, I mean, I'm always a little half suspicious of Frank Luntz focus groups because I think he has an opinion of where the country is, and he has an opinion of sort of even subconsciously what media outlets are interested in focusing. I wasn't super happy with the Oprah thing they did because I think it just plays to this narrative. And I think you and I could go out and have a focus group. Like, we could just pull from the focus group of our dang listeners and it wouldn't sound like that. So I'm bothered by the whole thing.
It wouldn't sound like that because we're not trying to produce conflict.
Exactly.
We're trying to produce solutions. And this, let's put a pin on that and come back to it because that goes along, I think, with our complicity discussion that we're going to have in our main segment today. Before that, just to give you an update on the federal budget.
Hmm.
There has been
up to the minute, federal updates, because the any update only expires. It only lasts like a week or two. So
right.
And you that's have to the process, follow along closely.
That's the process that Republicans in Congress have put in place. There is now a two-step process for funding the federal government through year end. There was a December 8th deadline and a December 22nd deadline. And Republicans passed a two-week stopgap funding bill to get us from the 8th to the 22nd. And here is what Sarah Lenti, who is a political strategist and policy advisor who served under Condoleezza Rice and worked as a lead researcher for Mitt Romney's 2010 book, had to say about this. Eyes wide open. Republicans aren't stalling the shutdown because they are working on thoughtful bipartisan solutions to issues ranging from deferred action for childhood arrivals or DACA to defense spending to infrastructure to the Children's Health Insurance Program known as CHIP. In fact, in the words of one Republican representative earlier this week, the stalls are to sort through end-of-year drama among themselves, an obviously prudent use of taxpayer money.
Ugh.
In this column from Sarah Lenti, she predicts a shutdown sometime next year because they're going to keep doing stopgap measures until they can't anymore, because they're going to have to get something done in order to not be just slaughtered in 2018 races. And she doesn't think that they're going to get there.
Also, while we're on the topic of economic policy and the way in which the GOP is currently legislating. So the Wall Street Journal had this article called "The Tax Man Cometh, Senate Bill's Marginal Rates Could Top 100% for Some." This is a quote. "Some high-income business owners could face marginal tax rates exceeding 100% under the Senate's tax bill, far beyond the listed rates of their Republican plan. That means a business owner's next $100 in earnings under certain circumstances would require paying more than $100 in additional federal and state taxes." It says, this is a Wall Street Journal, y'all. "Precision sacrifice for speed." Oh, no, this is Washington Post. "Precision sacrifice for speed as GOP rushes ahead on taxes." Like, they were trying to get this done so quickly that they don't even, like, they have made huge problems for themselves. There's some incredibly bad law in here. Not just, we're trying to fix a problem, we don't know exactly how this is going to work out. Just, like, bad errors. What the heck? Like, typos that lead to people having to pay a $100 marginal tax rate. Oh, my man. Get it together, guys.
And you can't get it together in 2 weeks. You can't get DACA and CHIP and infrastructure and defense spending done in 2 weeks. That is bananas. It really discourages me.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. Y'all had 7 years to put together the complex policy that would be your answer to healthcare. That should have been your big thing you got accomplished in like the first year of being in control of both houses of government. And you failed. So stop trying to squeak out a victory. That's not how legislation works. Just cut it out. Like, just stop. You got it wrong. You didn't do it. You weren't ready. You couldn't pass it. That's the reality. Stop trying to rewrite history and save the day. It's just ridiculous. This is not a football game. This is Congress. This is legislation. You are not going to be able to throw a Hail Mary and save yourselves. It's ridiculous.
I really like Senator Tim Scott, and I was listening to him being interviewed over the weekend. I think he's a thoughtful guy. I think he wants to do the right thing most of the time. And in reference to Roy Moore, he said, and he strongly said he was against him before the allegations of sexual assault came out. And he said, look, our party is big enough to have disagreement within the party. And that's true. And I think that's a fair thing to say. The answer is, you shouldn't be in a situation where you need 100% of your party to back something like the budget, because you should be doing that with independents and with Democrats. When you set up the United States Congress like a survivor vote, where if anybody switches alliances, you're screwed, you're doing it wrong.
That's not how you should do these kinds of questions. I never thought about that. Like, that's so much pressure on your caucus. What a terrible way to treat your members.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? Like, that just puts too much pressure on them. You should be able to get this done without every single person. That puts way too much pressure on your members and puts them in untenable positions that they then have to explain to their voters. That's such a good point. I never thought about it like that.
And who has that pressure landed on this year? We have acted like Susan Collins and Lisa Murkowski hold the fate of the nation in their hands. Mm-hmm. And that's wrong, and that's ridiculous, and not where we should be. And it's because this entire party has decided they're not going to talk to anybody else about funding the government.
I couldn't agree more.
So let's compliment the other side before we head into our main section, which I think is relevant to everything that we've discussed so far.
I mean, can I just steal Tim Scott? I'm just going to steal Tim Scott. I'm just going to take that
one. He is a very thoughtful person. And
I really, really
wish
like
we
that.
Had more like him.
And I'm going to keep thinking about that. So I'm definitely going to, because that is an incredibly good insight. And I'm going to keep thinking about that one for a while. So good insight, Tim Scott.
I wanted to compliment Bill Scheer, who I know nothing about, except that he was quoted in a story about the Democratic Party moving forward in Politico, which I read with a lot of interest as an outsider. A number of people, you know, people like Tim Kaine, all the way down to more behind the scenes operators, were asked what the Democratic Party needs to do from here. There was a lot of hand-wringing in this article about, and not just hand-wringing, but real passion about, we need to eliminate superdelegates, we need to get rid of caucuses, we need to change this and that, about the apparatus that is the DNC. And Bill Scheer said, you know what we need to change? Absolutely none of that. Mm-hmm. There are great arguments for all of that, and the counter-arguments are just as persuasive. And I don't care what the Democratic Party does, necessarily. But I was so relieved to hear an adult voice say, sometimes both, there's just effective,
arguments
there are effective
on
arguments
sides.
On both sides,
yep.
You know, and this is kind of a waste of time because we're not going to dramatically change this party by getting rid of superdelegates. Mm-hmm. And I think that sounds true and mature, and I appreciated it.
Yep. I have some thoughts on the Democratic Party, but I'm going to save that for our main segment in Complicity, which is coming up next. So when Beth recommended Lindy West's article on Complicity, I thought she was just like making the argument the word of the year should be complicity. And then I discovered, no, dictionary.com really made the word of the year complicity.
I was stunned when I read the entry from dictionary.com about this choice. They talked about climate change and social media platforms, power and sexual assault, and even the president's statements about Charlottesville, and then wrote this. This year has seen a real awakening to complicity in various sectors of society, from politics to pop culture. As we do the hard work of processing what this all means, we must examine our own behavior and ask some difficult questions. Could I have spoken out in the past and didn't? Did I go along with something because it was the path of least resistance? Silence does not always equal complicity. We also must consider the very real reasons why we choose not to speak. Our choice for word of the year is as much about what is visible as it is about what is not. It's a word that reminds us that even inaction is a type of action. The silent acceptance of wrongdoing is how we've gotten to this point. We must not let this continue to be the norm. If we do, then we are all complicit. That is from dictionary.com.
I mean, get it, dictionary.com. That's amazing. Round of applause. And then I was listening to Ezra Klein's podcast. He has written a big piece on impeachment. And there's just a section of the show where he talks about, you know, what are the history books going to say about us? When we look back, this is an abnormal situation by any definition. What is going to happen? What are we going to, they going to look back and say that we did? And he's like, I just wanted, you know, for my small role in it, I didn't want to say, well, I'm not going to examine impeachment because it's politically unpopular or people are going to accuse me of bias. He's like, I just felt like I have to do what I'm going to do. And I thought it was just a very interesting statement on complicity. It just seems like everybody's come to the realization. I think it's part of it is like we've been here for a year now and everybody's looking around and been like, oh, man, what is going on? And I think the Me Too movement is a huge part of that, where we're all just sort of assessing ourselves and our society. And I think it's really positive.
I think it's really positive. I think it's heartbreakingly difficult.
Mm-hmm.
I think that because it's heartbreakingly difficult, many of us maintain a stake in the idea that this is normal,
mm-hmm.
that we aren't in uncharted territory. I think that's why, especially as it relates to President Trump, so many people attempt over and over to make him just another president.
Mm-hmm.
And I do think the question, how will history look upon that, is a really important one.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, and that's what I was thinking about with relationships. That's what I was going to talk about with relationship to the Democratic Party, steering away from Trump for just a moment. Although I do think it's sort of related. So what I felt like I learned a lot, particularly with the Republican primary and with the election of Donald Trump, is sort of the powerlessness of the parties to do what they used to do, which is to vet candidates. I think you see that in Roy Moore. I think the best thing I've read about Roy Moore is a former aide to McConnell saying, this is what happens when you let crazies like Steve Bannon nominate candidates. They don't vet.
We are special breakfast people here at Pantsuit Politics, but not just when Beth and I are on the road. The truth is, I want something warm from the oven every Saturday morning and Sunday morning. It's just the truth. It makes it feel special, makes it feel exciting. I don't want to work at it. So the first time I ever saw Wild Grain, which is bake from frozen subscription box for sourdough breads, fresh pastas, and artisanal pastries, I was obsessed. You guys, I've been a member for over a year. It's amazing. It's so easy. Every item bakes from frozen in 25 minutes or less, no thawing required. You can fully customize your Wild Grain box. You can choose any combination of breads, pastas, pastries. You can even build a box of only breads, only pastas, or only pastries if you'd like. And for a limited time, you can get $30 off the first box, plus free croissants in every box when you go to wildgrain.com/pantsuit to start your subscription. Sometimes I make one single croissant just for me because I want to feel special, and they're so good. You heard me. Free croissants in every box. And $30 off your first box when you go to wildgrain.com/pantsuit. That's wildgrain.com/pantsuit. Or you can use promo code pantsuit at checkout. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Can I get something off my chest? Every day I feel a little pang of sadness because I think about Griffin going away to college. Y'all, he's a freshman in high school. This is not healthy or normal. This is why I have it on my list of things to talk to my therapist about. We all carry around these things, big and small. When we keep them bottled up, it can start to affect us. Therapy is a safe space to get these things off your chest and to figure out how to work through whatever's weighing you down. If you're thinking about starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapist anytime for no additional charge. You gotta get it off your chest. And you can get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/pantsuit today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/pantsuit. Looking for the perfect gift to celebrate the moms in your life? Aura frames are beautiful Wi-Fi connected digital picture frames that allow you to share and display unlimited photos. It's super easy to upload and share photos via the Aura app. And if you're giving an Aura as a gift, you can even personalize the frame with preloaded photos and memories. You guys, I love my Aura frames. I have one in my office. I have one in my kitchen. I have given one as a housewarming gift. I have given one as Mother's Day, Father's Day. They are the most amazing gifts because this app is a game changer, in my personal opinion, in digital frames. It makes it so, so easy to get the pictures on there and even videos. It plays like you're in Harry Potter, you guys. It is the best. I love mine so much. And right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's AuraFrames.com. Use code PANTSUIT at checkout to save. Terms and conditions apply.
They don't background check. They don't hold any sort of standard of comment or ethics. And look, I am not arguing that political parties are our last vestige of ethics and politics. Clearly, that is not the case. Clearly, they are a huge part of the problem a lot of the time. But I do think that they were a minor safeguard. And so I feel like what happened with Al Franken, that he resigned, and I know there are a lot of Democrats unhappy with that, people that listen to this podcast. But I do feel like, for better or for worse, and this is happening in a lot of scenarios, including with the Me Too movement, I think we have a critical mass of women in positions of power, and I think that's particularly what happened with Al Franken, that said they used their power within the party, and the party did what it's supposed to do, which is say, no, that we have a standard, you have not met it, we will not be complicit in this power grab. And I think for better or for worse, the Republican Party has not done that and has been complicit in so much of their own downfall. And I kind of told Nicholas, I'm like, you know what makes me really proud to be a Democrat right now? That we're willing to make our base really mad. I know there is a base of Democratic support that's really mad right now that Al Franken was forced to resign. And I get it. But like, if you are a political party, I think your complicity comes about when you only deal with the base, when you only want to make the base happy. Like, to me, that's a form of complicity. Like, you are just, the only thing that matters is winning. The only thing that matters is your own power and making your base happy. And it makes me happy as a Democrat that the Democratic Party was willing to look at its base and say, you're not going to like this, and we're going to do it anyway. And I'm sorry. I mean, maybe it's personal because they're still trying to kick me out of the Democratic Party right now. A small subset of activist base members in the Democratic Party in McCracken County. Maybe that's it. But like, I just think we go along to get along. And we take the path of least resistance because we know we will make people mad and we don't want to do it. And we don't want to put ourselves out there and take the heat. But that was another part of my sort of favorite part in Ezra Klein's piece, which was, look, the founding fathers were elitist. This is an elitist system set to protect ourselves from the whims of the masses. You don't like it, that's fine. Let's talk about rewriting the Constitution. But that is the system we built. And he was sort of like, you know, we have a system right now where the elitists are like never willing to do something unpopular. Like this idea that like, well, just let the voters decide. That's not what the founding fathers believed. Like, I just want to put that out there. Like, no, they built in safeguards to say, if you're an elite and the masses are going to get it wrong, fix it. Take the heat, fix it. People aren't going to like it. It's not going to be popular. Do it anyway. That's your job as an elite. And I thought that was a really interesting point. And I was proud of the Democratic Party elites. Yes, they are elites. They are senators. They are power players inside the party. And they did what they're supposed to do, which is say this far and no further.
So we have Star Wars tickets coming up. That's why this metaphor comes to mind for me. I think what we need is balance in the force. And I think that what we're coming around to is that there has not been balance in the force.
Yep.
We have had real problems with elitism in the United States. Mm-hmm. A lot of what Me Too is about is the fact that you can't trust people in positions of power. Because power is corrupting, and that power is corrupting whether you are the manager at Lowe's or the president of the United States. I don't think that always has to be true, but a huge lesson for Me Too is that the concentration of power in too few people has become a major problem in our country. And that is why many people, I understand wanting more of a citizen government. I understand being frustrated with feeling like you had to go to an Ivy League school and know all of the right people to be able to work for the New York Times or to get elected in the United States Congress. I understand that feeling. So we needed some course correction. The answer is not to swing all the way over to unchecked populism, which is what's happening with making the base happy right now in the parties. It's about balance and the force. It's about saying, I can respect the role of parties to vet candidates, but that vetting needs to have its outer limits. That vetting needs to be done responsibly. That vetting doesn't exist in order to make one or two people the gatekeepers to everyone who ever gets on a ballot. That's really hard stuff, to have structures that are meaningful, that function appropriately, and that also don't take advantage of the power and the responsibility granted to those structures. But that is, friends, what we got to figure out in our families and our workplaces and our politics. That's what we've got to figure out.
It did seem like, I'm hoping, desperately praying, that there does seem to be a bubbling up within the Republican Party of people saying, beyond the usual candidate, you know, the usual suspects like Mitt Romney and Evan McMullen, saying this far and no further. Richard Selby, the senior senator from Alabama, went on Jake Tapper's show on CNN on Sunday morning. He is sort of notoriously doesn't do a lot of press. He waited till this last weekend, went on the press and said, I did not and could not vote for Roy Moore, and you shouldn't either. So I thought that was powerful. I thought that was good for him. Good for him for saying, no, this is not, the only thing that matters is not the election of another Republican. You don't want to vote for a Democrat? Fine, write in a different Republican. But like this, I thought that was very admirable. And Nikki Haley also came out and said on CBS's Face the Nation with regards to women who have accused President Trump of sexual harassment, and there are many. She said they should be heard and they should be dealt with. And I think we heard from them prior to the election. And I think any woman who has felt violated or felt mistreated in any way, they have every right to speak up. So, look, I'm not saying I'm not ready to put Nikki Haley on a pedestal, but like pushing back against complicity comes in many forms. And I do think even if it's not good enough and it's not what we'd like them to do, any movement in the right direction should be praised. I do believe that.
People are doing this in incredibly hard places right now, too. There is a shocking essay. It's only shocking that it was written. What's in it is when you read it, you can understand how this happens. But there is a shocking essay out there about the experience of a clerk in the United States Court of Appeals under a federal judge that we'll link in the show notes. And I have to tell you that I think of all the things that have come out, this is one of the bravest things that I've seen. And maybe I have that perspective, having practiced law for a while, but there is a sense of sacredness about the bench and a sense that you do not talk about what happens in courts and that judges are above everyone else. And look, that's not good. The judiciary is critically important to our country, and it's also not good, and we've talked about this in political terms, it's not good for the judiciary to be so sacrosanct that a circuit judge can psychologically torture clerks.
Mm-hmm.
But I absolutely understand how that culture exists. That is not shocking to me at all that that culture exists. When I think about the power differential, I guess here's part of what troubles me so much about the idea of fake news. A lot of what is needed to restore that balance between, you know, kind of the trustee and delegate model of our public officials is truth. And when we're constantly assaulting what's in front of us and the truth of it to the point where we don't believe anything,
yeah,
I don't know how we move forward. I think the best thing we can do to combat complicity in our lives in every aspect is to make sure that we're surrounded by people who will tell us the truth.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, can I give everybody some homework? I've never done this before. I want to give everybody some homework. Look, if you occupy any position of power, and you should define that very broadly, if you're a parent, if you're a manager, if you're an elected official, if you're a professional, like if you have power over anyone in your life to any degree, you need to look around and make sure that you have at least one person and preferably more who is very different from you and always willing to tell you the truth.
Mm-hmm.
And willing to tell you the truth in ways that could be hurtful, in ways that you will most certainly disagree with sometimes. And you trust that person to be telling you the truth from a place of love. If you don't have that, you're doing it wrong. And you are at risk for some very bad decision making and some real abuse of your power without even knowing that you're doing it.
Yeah.
And if you don't have one of those positions of power, and I think most of us do, but if you don't have one of those positions, think about how you can be more of a truth teller to the people who do. Mm-hmm. You know, who can you develop a relationship with where you can speak that kind of truth to them? Because I really think that is the only thing that starts to get us back to the, or I don't know if we've ever been there, honestly. Like if you realistically and open-heartedly examine our history, maybe we've never found that balance.
Yeah,
but
seriously,
you know, we're always evolving. So I think that's the next step. If we want to evolve out of this, I think it requires us at every level to engage more with people who are willing to just call us out and say really hard things to us from a loving place.
And look, that's to take this back around as it always does to Donald Trump. That's always been my number one concern with him. It is not his policies. It is not even his Diet Coke usage. It is the fact that he seems incapable of self-awareness and self-evolution. And that is terrifying to me. People who refuse to take in information that contradicts their worldview are dangerous. It's a dangerous way to be. It is how people go to jail for crimes they don't commit. It is how people are abused and oppressed. It's because, I mean, I really think that, like, the idea that I'm never wrong is maybe one of the most dangerous viewpoints you can have. And so if you're going to fight against complicity, you know, you have to be a truth teller and you have to think, like, sometimes I'm going to get it wrong too. And, you know, I think that it's difficult. It is difficult because I think the reason we're talking about it is here's what we realized. We realized the world felt like it ended last November to a lot of us. But it didn't. It went on and we laughed and we had parties and we bought things we shouldn't have bought and we binged watched Netflix. And it feels like, you know, the world went on but is changing in big ways. And I think we all have some anxiety about that. The anxiety that the conflict between we feel the same, our lives are still comfortable in much the same way as they were for most of us back in November, but we know things are different. And what does that mean? And what's our responsibility for that? And how do we continue to be good citizens and good active members of this democracy and stay energized and figure out the impact of all this in the face of so much unknown, in the face of so much fear. And look, I don't have a great answer for that. I had a wonderful weekend and then saw that terrible picture that went around of the starving polar bear and thought, I don't even know what I thought. I just felt anxiety. I feel guilty when I have a good time. Like, it's just a tough space we're all in right now. And I think that the reason they picked that word is because we're all sort of waking up and saying, okay, if the revolution isn't going to come overnight, how do we fight it? How do we, if the resistance isn't an impeachment or a different electoral college vote in the first 3 months, what does that mean? What does it mean? How do we go on with our daily lives and still fight against something we know is wrong? And that's hard. It's just hard.
You know why I think there's a glass ceiling in so many organizations? I think it's because once you rise above that glass ceiling and look down on the whole, a lot of what you realize is that the emperor has no clothes. A lot of the things that are hardwired into organizations are just unnecessary and often counterproductive and exist solely to keep the people who are being enriched by the organization enriched, or who are empowered by the organization in power. And often, when you bring somebody new to that top floor, that person is willing to say, this doesn't make any sense, y'all. And that's hard. And because it's so hard, we have created a world in which people who are willing to say that don't get to the top floor, right? Mm-hmm. Or the only people who get to the top floor are people who are willing to be complicit.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a really painful thing about this moment is reflecting on where we participate in that individually. I know I've thought a lot over the past few weeks about the times when I've been in conversations that go like this. Well, we really need a woman to do this. And I think to myself, I don't know if we have the right woman, and the wrong woman makes it even worse. And that is both true. Like, that makes me a pragmatic strategist. It also makes me complicit, because the easiest thing in the world to be is the wrong kind of woman. The easiest thing in the world is to try to step up into a new environment and then be told that you've gotten it wrong. Your tone was wrong. What you said was wrong. You don't have exactly the right experience. Those are the gatekeepers. And I've participated in that, and that sucks. Like, that rips me up to think about. And we're all doing that all the time. Mm-hmm. And being asked to stop is painful, and it is hard, and it will not happen overnight, and it won't happen in a fun way that you can like have a snazzy slogan on a t-shirt about.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I feel that in such a global way, you know, because when you were talking about, are you in a position of power? Well, if you're an American, yeah, you are.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, back to that Ezra Klein, he said, you know, we are the most powerful country in the history of the world. And we have put someone incapable of doing the job in the most powerful position in our country. And, you know, I can rail against his terrible decision making in moving the capital of Jerusalem. But I am neither Palestinian or Israeli, and it's not my children's safety at risk due to that decision. And so it's easy for me to complain and then move on and go decorate Christmas cookies. And I feel terrible about that, but I feel powerless too. And that's the painful part of complicity, right? It's because it is easier to maintain the status quo. And I don't know, and I don't think it's fair or realistic to demand all of us sort of take to the streets. I don't think that's going to happen, although, heck, it's happened more in the last year than I've probably seen it happen in my lifetime. But, you know, I feel lost. I feel powerlessness in the face of conversations about complicity because I want to do more and I do everything I can, but I don't know.
Sarah and I have talked many times about our desire to age as gracefully as possible, and skincare is a huge piece of that. I spend a lot of time and money thinking about my skin, and I have added Ritual to my routine, which just gives me a lot of comfort. Ritual is here for us. They have created a wrinkle support skin supplement and conducted clinical studies, so we know it's working. They're taking the guesswork out of skincare. Ritual Hyacera is one of several Ritual products that I love. I take the daily multivitamin, I take a probiotic, and Hyacera is that once daily skincare supplement that is clinically proven to reduce wrinkles and fine lines and increase skin smoothness in 90 days. I recently met a friend for the first time in person as opposed to online, and we were discussing the fact that I am 43, and she said, I cannot believe how young you look, and I thought, thank you, Ritual, for that. Start Hyacera to help minimize wrinkles without compromising on clean science. Hyacera from Ritual is a clinically proven skin supplement you can actually trust. Get 25% off your first month for a limited time at ritual.com/pantsuit. Start Ritual or add Hyacera to your subscription today. That's ritual.com/pantsuit for 25% off.
Do you want a bra that's sexy or a bra that's comfortable? Thanks to Third Love, you can have both. Third Love was started to take all the frustration, ick, and ugh out of bra shopping. That's why they make solutions for every bra problem, aka problems. Their bras make it easy to bring back perkiness you haven't seen since high school, get smoothing you know where, and have straps that actually stay put. Designed at their headquarters in San Francisco and made from premium materials, they put every style through hours of wear testing on real women, including themselves, before it's given the stamp of boob approval. Comfort and support are guaranteed. Plus, whether you're a double A cup or an H cup, their virtual fitting room will help you find your perfect fit fast. And they've even invented half cups. No more feeling stuck between two cup sizes that don't fit right. It's time to get your problems solved. Visit thirdlove.com and get 15% off your order with code PODCAST15.
There's not much worse than a dry and itchy scalp. Also, when you get your hair colored and then it does not last as long as you and your stylist discussed, it could be that unfiltered, mineral-filled water is the culprit. Hard water is a leading cause of damaged hair and dry, irritated skin, and about 85% of the United States uses hard water, filled with dissolved minerals and added chlorine. That's where Canopy's new filtered shower head comes in. Canopy, known for their beauty hacks and reimagined humidifier, has revolutionized the filtered shower head. Dermatologists recommended this unique 3-stage filtration system greatly reduces contaminants and odors in your shower water, leaving you with healthy hair and glowing skin. Best of all, the Canopy filtered shower head is hassle-free. Installation is a breeze, and its unique quick-release filter replacement feature allows for seamless filter replacement unlike any others on the market. Go to getcanopy.co to save $25 on your Canopy filtered showerhead purchase today with Canopy's hassle-free filter subscription. Even better, our listeners can use code PANTSUIT at checkout to save an additional 10% off your Canopy purchase. Hurry, your hair and skin will thank you.
I would like to encourage you to not feel that way.
Thank you.
You are an elected official.
True.
You are using your voice on this podcast all the time. You are talking to your friends and neighbors. You are doing your work.
Mm.
And I think that's the question for each of us. What is our work?
Mm-hmm.
I think some of my work right now is self-reflection.
Mm-hmm.
What have I contributed to that is not the world that I want to see? And how do I stop doing that? And how do I contribute more in the best way that I'm equipped to a better world? We had a listener email us, and we are going to take her up on this in January about, like, how can we all equip ourselves to do our work? And especially if your work doesn't mean running for office, what can you be doing? And we have to be prepared for some answers to that that maybe aren't always the answers we want. I was telling somebody about this podcast the other day. I love doing this, but I honestly feel at this point like it doesn't matter if I want to do it or not.
Mm.
This is what I'm supposed to be doing right now. This is what you and I are supposed to be doing right now. Sometimes I think we want a certain kind of answer. I think there are people who love being part of the resistance, right? And who love,
yeah,
like making all kinds of phone calls and firing off emails, and good for them. I don't have any fight with that. That alone is not going to do it.
Mm.
And honestly, most of this is not about Donald Trump.
Mm.
I believe in my soul that he is symptom, not disease.
Word.
And we have got to get our minds around that if we want to change everything to be better. And I don't think changing everything to be better should be such a scary idea, because these are matters of the soul as
mm-hmm.
much as anything else.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, put down the defensiveness. That might be your work, right?
Yeah.
Your only work might be to just put down the defensiveness. I got this incredible email from a listener, and I want to share more about it at some point, but I don't have his permission to do that yet, and I feel like I need it. But essentially, we're having this back and forth discussion about conversation between men and women based on the discussion we had about how men typically instruct and women invite. It is one of the most interesting email exchanges I've ever had with anyone, because we're both just like earnestly saying, here's what I know and here's what I don't know about this. And here are the everyday interactions that we have with each other and tiny little signals that we give each other in those interactions, and how I think we could change those to start to be more balanced. Like, that to me is incredibly fulfilling, and that's really different than marching or something, mm-hmm. right?
Well,
but we all have to play those roles.
It's so good because you're so good at helping me see, like, I really just the activist part of me, and the reason people always hear us on the Nuanced Life and think I'm the conservative is because there is a strong current of black and white in me, and I want there to be a right answer. I want us to all sign off on it, and we'll all do it together, and we'll all decide that this is the one thing we're going to do, and it's going to fix it. Like, that's how my brain works. That's how my brain wants the world to work, even though I know it doesn't. And this is why I have the truth teller that has Beth Silvers in my life, to be like, no, it doesn't work like that. We're all not going to find one solution we're going to do it. It's going to fix it. I mean, that would make me feel so much better in my control oriented heart. But I know you're right. I know we have to do the best we can, and it's going to look different on everybody. I know. It's just hard.
And oddly, you know, I'm the political conservative because I think it is really important for it to not usually be one way or the other, and to make space for lots of different things and a lot of complexity. I'm sad that the party that I thought I could affiliate with has run away from that. But I do think right now there's so much to think about and so much to fix. No one is served by you. Like, have days when you eat Ben and Jerry's and worry about the polar bears, okay? But no one is served by being stuck there.
I mean, the polar bear looks so sad. Did you see him?
I did, and it's awful.
It's so awful.
Like, don't get bogged down. Get inspired, not bogged down.
Yeah.
Get inspired to where you can identify your work and go out and do your work and know that you're contributing your piece to this big universe that we all live in, and try to inspire other people to do the same thing. You don't have to solve every problem. You're not complicit if you are not fixing the world right now. That's not the call to action.
Right. Well, and here's the thing that makes me feel better and hopeful is that I feel like when I went to Vox Conversations 2 years ago and when we were in the middle of the election, I was having some very small conversations about our institutions are not up for the challenges we need them to be up for. Like, I felt like there was like some small spaces. This podcast was definitely one of them. And like where we were having kind of beating around, like, we're just, everything needs to change. We're in a different world. We're not in the 1950s, 60s, which many of our institutions were built for. Like, we need a different world. And now I feel like in the last year in particular, in the last several months, like, that conversation has gotten so much bigger. It seems like everybody's like, man, everything's broken or like just beat up and like needs to be upgraded and updated. And that is encouraging to me. Like, the idea that we're, and maybe, you know, God bless me, maybe it took Donald Trump for us to all look around and be like, oh, it's all broken. Okay. Well, we're Americans. We can handle this. Like, let's have a long, long, very painful conversation about what's broken. But I do feel like that's the first essential step, and it does seem to be happening. So that is a huge source of hope for me.
And none of us need to take it personally. When you hear that it's broken, you don't need to take that on personally. You don't have to do that. I think that's why we get so defensive all of a sudden. I think when those of us who are white hear that race relations have always been broken in our country and have contributed substantially to the wealth of our country, for example, we tend to like take that on very personally and get super defensive about it. We don't have to do that.
I mean, here's my just own personal reason that I think I go to this place. Not to throw Baptists under the bus, but I was raised Baptist. Did you ever hear about Lottie Moon?
Yes.
So Lottie Moon was...
every year.
Every year, y'all. Yeah. Every year. Lottie Moon was a missionary in China, and she gave and gave and gave and gave until she literally starved herself, and she was held up as an example. As an example every year of, like, something to strive for. And I think it just got in my head that, like, if you're not, you know, used to, I would, like, sit around in terror that I would be called to be a missionary like Lottie Moon. Literally, I was like terrified of it. Like, oh my gosh, I'm going to be called to be a missionary. I don't want to do that. I don't want to starve myself. And now I feel like I've just like transferred a lot of that to politics. Like, oh my God, I should be like in the streets. I should be doing more. I should be sacrificing it all for the cause. I think a lot of this is just my evangelical Lottie Moon upbringing, for real though.
And I think that there's a lot to be said for that. When I go back to that Frank Luntz focus group, I think that there are people sitting there who sincerely believe that conservative policy, defined largely by social issues, is so essential to their belief system, and not their political belief system, but their belief system about like what we're doing here on Earth and what our calling is as humans, that they can't unravel any of it.
Mm.
And so every new bit of information is greeted with a shield up.
Mm-hmm.
And so your work to avoid complicity might just be putting that shield down,
mm-hmm,
to say, what can I hear in a new way? What can I hear that I've not heard before? What can I hear and not take to mean that I am personally bad or wrong? And that is a big ask for lots and lots of people in this country because of stories very much like the one that you just told.
Okay, I feel better. How about you?
Yeah, I think so.
All right. Well, then good. That means let's move on to what's on our minds outside politics.
I'd like to lighten things up a little bit here.
Please.
And talk about,
after Lottie Moon and her starvation, I'm telling you, I carry her everywhere I go. Go ahead.
I'd like to talk about Spotify and how it enables a very peculiar habit that I have. I love a good cover more than anything else. I love to hear a song like in all kinds of different variations. And Spotify is so wonderful because I can just put the title of a song in and then basically have an instant playlist of that song over and over by different people interpreted in different ways. And I am so stoked.
I mean, I
about
do that
it.
With Christmas songs. Like, I love Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas. I think it is the best. And I have like approximately 15 versions of it. But I never do that with like other songs. What songs do you listen to? Like
pretty
that?
Well, only do it with other songs. Well, if I really, really like a song or think it's a really interesting song, I do this. And I'm always excited by what I found. For example, do you know the song Hide and Seek by Imogen Heap?
I think so.
Well, it's a great song and a really kind of unusual song. And there are some wonderful covers of that song, which I wouldn't have imagined. The Scientist. I love the song The Scientist.
Yeah.
There are some fantastic covers of The Scientist. There's a really interesting cover of Someone Like You by Adele from this group of guys that just put a really different kind of spin on it. I don't know. It just makes me happy. I don't know what it is about kind of the freedom to explore these songs that are sort of well-charted terrain, but I really love that about Spotify.
Well, I'm continuing my just devouring of pop culture because I was moving and I didn't get to watch any TV or read books or do anything for what felt like 2 or 3 months. So I finished A Man Called Ove and I loved it. I'm reading a new book called I See You, which is an Anne Bogle recommendation. I went to see Lady Bird. Have you heard about Lady Bird?
Yes, I have. How was it?
It's so good. I cried so hard. There's this amazing line where then she's writing her college essay and she's like, wants to get out of Sacramento. And the nun says, you write beautifully about Sacramento. You really love it. And she's like, no, I don't. I just pay attention. And the nun says, that strikes me as the same thing.
Oh, I love that.
Line. It's such a good line. Oh, it's so, I literally gasped. I was like, that is so good. It's just really beautiful. So good. And I hope I pronounce her name right. Saoirse Ronan is so good. She was amazing in Brooklyn. That's what I saw her in last, but she's just so good in it. And like, you can just see the beauty and the love that the female filmmaker who I can't remember her name. Greta is her first name. I can't remember her last name. Has for like the Sacramento and her own mom. And like, it was so good. And then I watched the first episode of season 2 of The Crown. Now, did you watch season 1? You didn't, did you?
I watched like 2 episodes.
Oh, it's so good. I just love her so much. I'm waiting for another individualization where the rock gets in, which we all know just rocked my party last time. But it's I watched 1 episode. I also watched an episode a Hallmark movie called Sharing Christmas because friend of the pod, Lori, has a podcast with her husband, who's a pop culture writer, called A Very Hallmark Christmas, in which they are watching all 33 new Hallmark movies, holiday movies, and then podcasting about them. And so Nicholas and I are going to go guest, guest star on the pod on Wednesday about this movie, Sharing Christmas, which was so terrible. I don't even know what to say. It was so terrible. I want those 2 hours of my life back. But it'll be really fun to talk about. It was fun to watch it. We watched it with my mom and my stepdad. And my stepdad, like, loves Hallmark movies. And he was like, this is not one of the better ones. And I bet you he told us 5 times. What I really love is A Christmas Wish. That's my favorite. I mean, I bet he told us that 6 times. I'm going to have to go watch A Christmas Wish now. But, like, oh, man, it was so bad and so cheesy and so plot holes left and right. But it'll be fun to talk about that. So if you are a pop culture or Hallmark fan, go check out Lori's podcast on Wednesday. Nicholas and I will be over there.
Speaking of lowbrow television, a new season of Top Chef has started and I'm so excited. And I have like my fancy politics people who watch Big Brother and Survivor, but I do not know who watches Top Chef. So if
wait,
you
is
watch
Top Chef is the chefs compete to win. Like the It's not the
yes.
one where they make the things with the defined ingredients. What's that one?
No, that's Chopped.
Chopped. I watched Chopped a little bit.
Top Chef is like truly talented, sophisticated culinary minds coming to the table. So, I mean, it's a little better than a lot of the other reality shows that I watch. But anyway, if you would like to talk Top Chef on Twitter with me, I would be super excited about
it. Have I ever told you how I feel about food shows?
No.
I do not understand the appeal of food television. Clearly, I am the minority here because it is a massive behemoth of a channel and the shows are hugely popular. But like every time I watch them, I just want to eat it. Like it's torture.
You don't cook. That's why I love watching it, because I always learn something, because I love to cook.
Okay, that makes sense. But there are people who watch those shows who don't cook.
I'm sure there are. But I'm just saying for you, I can see why you don't like them.
Yeah, because it's just torture. I'm like, well, I want to eat that now and I can't. So this sucks. Like, I really want to eat this beautiful food from this artisan ice cream shop in New York City. And I really want to eat this amazing scallops dish this guy just put together. Like, I just want to eat it all.
See, for me, it's never like, oh, I want to eat that. It's more like, oh, I never would have put those two things together. I want to try that.
Well, that makes sense. That makes sense. But I'm a baker and I don't even like watch baking shows. But again, I just want to eat it. Anyway, that's just my weird. See, that's my black and white worldview again. If the food exists, then I must be able to eat it.
Well, thank you so much for joining us for another episode of Fancy Politics. I do not know who left this review for us, but before we go, I want to thank the person who left a review about anticipating that she would hear this podcast and love Sarah and just tolerate me and finds us more like Mr. Rogers, where you can't dislike either of us. It really touched me. So
that's awesome.
Thank you for that. We appreciate all of your reviews and all of your support. Until we are back with you on Wednesday on The Nuanced Life and Friday right here. Keep it nuanced, y'all. Thank you so much to our executive producers, Nicholas, Chad, Tracy, Leslie, Sabrina, and George.
You can join us on social media, Instagram and Facebook at Pantsuit Politics, and on Twitter at Pantsuit Politic, no S. And if you'd like to support the show, you can go to patreon.com, or reviews are always helpful, and you can leave one through the Apple Podcast app.
Thank you to Dante Lima, the composer of our Pantsuit Politics theme music.